Unorthodox listeners, this is Mark. We have a special episode this week. We teamed up with John McWhorter, the great linguist and the author of Talking Back, Talking Black, to do a special joint episode. We went into his studio for his podcast, Lexicon Valley. And, well, give it a listen. We were talking about language and words and Jews. And the important thing is that if you don't know his podcast yet, not only will you enjoy it with us as the guests this week, but then you really have to go subscribe. And Lexicon Valley is available at Panoply, so you can go to panoply.fm. It has its own website, and of course it's available on iTunes. You also have to buy all of John McWhorter's books. He's totally one of the great writers on linguistics, and we're all a big fan, right?
And pay $50,000 to go hear him at Columbia where he teaches.
Oh yeah, you could do that too.
It's the whole experience. The whole John McWhorter. Yeah.
The whole John McWhorter experience. Pay lots of money to hear him teach at Columbia. Buy his books on Amazon at the indie bookstore near you. But definitely, you know what's free? His podcast, Lexicon Valley. So here are all of us and all of him doing a special joint unorthodox Lexicon Valley episode. Have a listen.
Welcome again to Lexicon Valley, Slate's podcast about language, or language and linguistics, because I teach linguistics at Columbia and I like to say that word. In any case, I'm John McWhorter, and this week it's going to be like, remember how in the 70s when a sitcom was failing, they would bring it together with some other sitcom, and so Different Strokes and Hello, Larry would get together, and Arnold and whoever the young. Anyway, so that was the sort of thing that would happen. You'd have that kind of very special episode. This is a very special episode of Lexicon Valley, except Lexicon Valley, at least in my opinion, is not failing, and either is the wonderful podcast Unorthodox. But I've got the Unorthodox hosts up in here with me, and we're going to do a joint show about Jewish language. Who do I mean? Well, we have Mark Oppenheimer. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I like to think of it as Family Ties goes to England.
For example.
For example,
right.
Yeah.
Although, did they meet the cast of some other show while they were there?
No. They brought in, you know, a street urchin. They got another baby, and then they went to England. And that's how they staved off.
Who fell in love? Because by then, I had stopped watching.
I think Mallory had
it would have been her.
A liaison.
Right. Oh, Mallory.
In Oxford,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is Family Ties in England.
Some fellow. And also, as we just heard, I'm Leo Leibovitz. Welcome to the show.
I prefer to think of it as The Love Boat, which is my absolute favorite show growing up.
Didn't they get together with fans?
They got together with everyone.
They sent someone to Congress.
On that break in Puerto Vallarta, they got together with whoever would get together with them.
You know what show doesn't hold up if you watch it again today? The Love Boat, actually. That's also Stephanie Butnick. Thank you for being here.
I think of this as the Mindy Project crossing over with Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
That would be cool. And actually, wait. That
happened.
That happened.
Yeah.
That's right.
That
I remember.
Yeah.
I saw that episode. That's right. Those are two shows that everybody should watch more, especially the Mindy Project. It's failing unsupportably. In any case, our topic today is, it kind of ties into the fact that I've touched on there being a black English now and then. And my thesis has been that, yes, there is a such thing. But is there a such thing, and this would be of interest, of course, to the Unorthodox crew, is there a such thing as Jewish English? And if there is, what is it? And if there isn't, why not? I could not kick this off with the following clip, which I know you're all thinking about. So let's hear this here as an introductory nugget as to what Jewish English might be.
It's Mother's Day, and my daughter Robin did not show up. She's getting married, and this year she's visiting his mother. So now I'm sitting here, Elaine Vierstein, alone like a dog. Thanks a lot, and out with the garbage. They take bows, and you're batting zero. I had a dream. I dreamed it for you, Robin. Now I'm getting a little verklempt. Talk amongst yourselves.
So the question becomes, folks, is there a Jewish way of talking?
You brought on us three Jews to tell you that?
Yes, yeah, so, I did, because it's cultural
like
appropriation.
Jewish, there are probably several. You know, the one we talk and the others we would never dream of talking. Right?
I mean, is that one of them?
Let me take that one just to start with. Mike Myers, who of course isn't Jewish, based that character on his ex-mother-in-law. He has since left his wife. But at the time, it was based
on...
based on Robin's mother. Mm-hmm. And Robin was a Jewess. And what's interesting is that, to me, is a Jewish accent of a particular generation.
Nobody talks like that anymore. Nobody talks, no young
except
person.
To like to tell a story like their parents would.
So it's right. An affect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was also fairly indistinguishable from the New York accent of that generation, which you've talked about on your show and which also has sort of gone away. I think it lives on, and Stephanie, tell me if you agree with me here. It lives on.
I'm the
on,
young one.
You're also one who grew up on Long Island.
So oh, it's true. Well, I have a whole different host of issues.
You are special. Authentic. It's you have an honor to meet you.
But it lives on in Orthodox communities. There is definitely an Orthodox speak that if you get to communities that are a little bit more insular and a little bit less affected by popular culture, that if you heard someone talking like that, I would say that's someone coming out of a modern Orthodox enclave.
There are still people who sound like real-life Linda Richmans in the Orthodox community?
The Orthodox community that went to yeshiva will speak this wonderful
this
language
yeshivish.
Called yeshivish,
right?
Which actually doesn't sound so much like this, but has a lot of that code switching thing going on.
It's less accent and it's more like this thing that I'm telling you about. Like there's almost this Talmudic.
It's a rhythm.
Like, it's basically a text based language,
and they talk that
into
way while they're giving you a cup of tea.
Yeah. So if you go to a lecture by sort of like a modern Orthodox or an Orthodox professor, there's sort of this cadence that has almost a textual metabolism in some way.
And they'll say things in what sounds to you like English, you know, hey, if you're thinking about praying today, just remember it's mamash isser to daven shacharis after chatzot. And you'll be like, what?
So in other words, there's this language, this yeshivish language
there is.
That is spoken. I think we need to hear this in order to get a sense. I happen to have a clip of yeshivish being sung by a few vibrant young men. And so let's hear this.
Got a call on my cellar, shotguns on the line. The kesher to a Mabel who is able, sweet and fine. I told him it's not shayach, though I'd really like to meet her. Call me back on to Bishvat when I'm out of the freezer.
So that is
yeah.
What is to Bishvat?
Arbor Day.
Yeah, it's Jewish tree holiday.
It's a tree?
Yeah.
Do you know there was a Charlie Brown special called It's Arbor Day, Charlie Brown? I just thought that should be gotten in there. Anyway, so that's what Tu B'Shvat is?
Yeah. And,
okay.
And so that mix of English with Yiddish or Hebrew words dropped in there. So, for example, he says the Shadchan's on the line. Shadchan's a matchmaker, right? So you will hear that mix from people who are deep in the ultra-Orthodox community of yeshiva learning, but that's almost pre-Linda Richman. Like, that is almost reminiscent of like what the great grandparents talked like, and Linda Richman comes out of like secular Bronx or Long Island.
That person,
talk.
Yeah,
right. What is out of the freezer that he says?
Yes, so this is one of the most amazing things. There are a lot of expressions in yeshivish that make zero sense to speakers of English, like out of the freezer, or this doesn't ring true. It's like ring true. Well, yeah, it's klingon. It's from Yiddish. These are direct translations from Yiddish, and there are about like 100 of those.
Right, and you just have to know.
Yep.
What
and retranslate in your mind as you're speaking or listening back to the original Yiddish. Oh yeah, I know what that means.
It's also like how people say "I stayed by you." That means I stayed with you.
Right.
That's from German. I don't know if this is from Yiddish or if this is even a Jewish thing. I don't know from that, or I know from Challah. Like that to me is such a Jewish thing. I don't know. I think all sorts of Jews say it. I guess mostly an older generation, but
then
I don't know from
But people from our generation will say it too, slightly ironically. But then
they'll
say
I say it ironically.
You know, like, well, she doesn't know from Good Deli, and that one is very American. But you're right. There's a couple that come out of German syntax by way of Yiddish. So Stephanie pointed out, I stayed by them for Shabbos. But another one is, you want that I should go with you? You want that I should? That's coming out of German syntax.
Would any of the three of you say that? Yes, definitely. Would any of the three of you say you want that I should go with you? Who would say that?
Oh, Mark.
Today.
Absolutely, Mark. To girls.
Yeah.
Do you want that we should go on a date?
That's what I said to my wife. You want that we should get married?
Would any of my Orthodox Jewish students at Columbia say that?
I think if you came out of an Orthodox neighborhood.
But not if you're in a contemporary environment. I feel like you want that I should. That seems like how your parents talk to you or how you say something in the house.
Right.
I mean, I'll say things like, I know from Jewish podcasts. Like, I'll say that because that sentence seems so right. I would never say that I've sort of started slipping it in almost accidentally at this point, and I'm just thinking.
Do you say
funny.
It with a straight face, or is it affective?
Affective, yeah.
So you're basically saying American in the streets, Yiddish in the sheets.
Exactly,
type.
Yes.
I remember once I was reading a profile of the New Yorker, I think of William Julius Wilson, the black scholar at Harvard.
I can't wait to see how this is going to tie in with.
And somebody was talking about him, one of his black friends, and they were talking about how he was so Ivy League, right? He had been right. University of Chicago, then he was at Harvard. And one of his black friends was quoted as saying, well, you know, behind closed doors, he's a real get down brother linguistically. He could do black talk, but it literally...
He can switch.
He can switch, but it literally was only when the door was closed and right. he was like... Six Molsons in, and
right.
you know,
six.
I'm no doubt getting this a little bit wrong, but my memory was they
is
were saying,
this the analogy here?
It's
then?
Not that just that he switches, but he switches literally when the door is closed. And
right.
I think there are certain things, like I think at Columbia, Hillel, after the fifth post-Shabbos dinner shot of Slivovitz, you might hear some,
right.
you want that I should
go to the bar with you after
yeah.
this?
Right.
When the mics are off, I go full Gal Gadot. Like, but podcast, not to be talking the English like I do right now.
We are going to get to Gal Gadot.
But then there are things like, would it kill you to call your mother? Like phrases that actually have been
right.
adopted that I have no idea where, I mean, I can imagine where that one came from.
But that
from.
Signal Jewishness.
Yeah, would it kill you too? Probably the Holocaust, I would say. Is that the first Holocaust joke on this podcast, John?
It's probably the first time, given that I'm not usually, you know,
or even like to... it would have been enough.
It
would Dayenu, like that's
oh, the
obviously
Dayenu,
a Jewish
right.
word, but that's almost,
right.
I mean, that's a punchline at this point. Like, oh, Dayenu, like
right.
He, got into Harvard and Yale. I don't know why I'm doing that voice
that
right
one,
now.
You keep on mentioning that voice. That corresponds to something in the world.
I don't know anyone who talks like that. That's the weirdest thing.
That Dayenu song, by the way, is my favorite of, if I may, you people's songs. That Dayenu.
Oh,
that one
catchy.
Is that when I married my wife, who is a Jewish person, a Jewess, as you put it.
I don't like Jewess.
There's a great debate going on our podcast.
Negress,
on
Jewish, aren't those
well,
both wrong?
How do you feel about Negress?
Only very ironically.
But how do you feel about Negro? Are you bringing back Negro like Stanley Crouch was?
Arbitrarily, Negro is obsolete and to some people insulting. Stanley Crouch likes to use it with a certain aggressive irony.
But there's no room for Negress.
Not at all. If anything, it conveys something on a poster about an escaped slave.
So
something like that.
I understand that, but we at Unorthodox are bringing back
no,
we
Jewess. Are not. Is that true? You are bringing it back. Every time,
is.
I have to say, as the Jewess in the room, because there's Jewess, there's Jewess. Like, there's all sorts of ways of saying it. To me, it just conjures this, like, Nazi-laden, stereotype-filled thing. But then there are young women who are like, yeah, I'm a proud, badass Jewess.
To be clear,
Jewess. That pronunciation.
Not Jewess.
To be clear,
right.
Yeah. The blog of the Jewish Women's Archive in Boston is called Jewesses with Attitude.
Had he given to us,
why are you guys not mentioning the words, though? Because for me, Jewish language has been all these words that my wife and her family pop up with, like punim for face and being on spilkas mm-hmm. and all those, which to me are a collection because I find them exotic. And I get upset that I never seem to know them all. Aren't those part of it? Or are those now seen as something kind of antique?
To me, those are seen...
Kishkas.
Yeah, like... My fiance does say spilkis, like he gets spilkis before flights. And I had never even heard that word.
I didn't hear. What
oh,
is
they're
spilkis?
Going away.
Spilkis
pins.
Is like, yeah, like you're
pins
nervous.
And
yeah.
And right. Okay. Like I had shoulder surgery right now. I'm even feeling some spilkis in my hand. That's right.
See, he uses
this
it differently.
True,
I think in the version that has evolved to be in mean like.
He means on pins and needles.
Yeah,
right.
Like
that's how it's usually
feeling
used.
Nervous.
Right.
See, I think you're also seeing here the kind of differences in shading between us. Because in my family, ordinarily we would say, oh, I'm feeling verklempt today. You know, go ahead and go to.
You would
know,
say
go to
that.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of spilka. So I go look at your punim or your kepi. 100%.
What's kepi?
Head.
Head. Oh, you
from
kepi. Mm-hmm. Right.
From Kopf. So, I think every family has a different collection of ones that have persisted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. In my family, kepi was very, I mean, my mother would absolutely.
Standard.
And I come from several generations of secular Jews with, you know, affection for Yiddish and socialist politics, but no religion, right? And I've brought the religion back, much to everyone's chagrin. But kepi was never went away. And tuchus never
mm-hmm.
went away.
Totally.
But they didn't, for example, say punim. And I say that to my kids, which is
mm-hmm.
interesting. And I read an article recently that actually some words have come back. So, for example, everyone knows what it means to go to shul now, which is to go to synagogue. Highly American Jews of any tradition, people who don't have a lot of Yiddish in their vernacular, say, where do they go to shul on
right.
Saturday?
Yeah.
And 30 years ago, I didn't know anybody.
Which brings us to another point of discussion that we had on the show. One, we were talking about what you refer to as, you know, do you call it a shul, a temple, or a synagogue? Also, the matter of what you wish each other on a holiday. Do you say happy holiday or agid niyontif in Yiddish or chag sameach in Hebrew? It's
or Shabbat Shalom or Shabbat Good Shalom. Shabbos.
That's right.
And that, to me, depending on what you say, it sort of signals where you are on the religious spectrum.
Why do I hear Chag Sameach thrown around more than the Yontif one? Because Yontif, to me, is interesting because it's Yom Tov and it's Yiddishy, etc. That, I, who cares about the I in this case, I can grab onto that. Chag Sameach, to me, well, that's Hebrew and it's higher and it's more distant. But that's what I hear out on the streets. Why?
Because people are virtue signaling.
Because
not a popular opinion.
Because Israel. Because Hebrew school teachers and summer camp counselors over 30 and 40 years have come from Israel.
Okay.
And so they've reinfused the language with modern Hebrew.
I went to Hebrew school and it was Chag Sameach, Yom Huledet, Sameach. Like we sang the Hebrew, like we sang all that stuff and we said Shabbat Shalom. Like
right.
Shabbat Shalom. Hey, like that's a familiar thing. I found that typically people on the more religious end of the spectrum would say Good Shabbos or Again, Yontev, like, but now I think there is a rise in young people bringing that back in an interesting way.
This Yiddish revival that I keep hearing about, because, of course, the word on this metaphorical street used to be that Yiddish is a dying language, even though tens of thousands of children at any given time are being raised in the language in the United States. And yet it's supposedly a dying language because it's no longer used as much on the page. But I always thought there are thousands of languages in the world that would give anything to be being passed on to tens of thousands of children at a time. But now there's a Yiddish revival. Is that real or is it something that people are talking about that isn't happening?
That's I love the way you put it. It's not being used much on the page where people go for information these days to newspapers.
No, that might
and
that
magazines.
Might touch upon it. But if it's only spoken, is it not alive?
So there are Yiddish newspapers. I mean, Yiddish continues to be a contemporary language in the Hasidic community and only in the most closed off parts of the Hasidic community. So Satmar Hasidim do raise their children speaking Yiddish.
Right.
But there are Hasidic communities where the kids are much more comfortable in English. So, you know, the great comparison would be Amish. Like, do they still speak the old
German,
the old Amish German? I mean, are the kids speaking it better than English? I doubt that. Maybe in some towns.
Mm-hmm.
I think the one that the revival you hear about is that university enrollment in Yiddish.
That's what I meant.
Is high.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the Yiddish punk bands and like the klezmer movement.
Right.
It's sort of like a hipster thing.
Right.
That taking back Yiddish, taking back klezmer, taking back all these sorts of like old world identities.
Sure. And I think there's a political angle to it. Like everything in life. I think this is a really comfortable way for a lot of younger Jews who don't necessarily feel comfortable with the religion and certainly don't feel comfortable with Israel to reclaim Jewish identity by saying, okay, we're reaching back 150 years. Look at us. We're very engaged with our heritage, but we're doing it through this cosmopolitan, international, you know, universalist, socialist,
pacifist
past.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Right. That's interesting. I want to play a clip while we're on this subject of the old conception of the Jewishness of one's parents being about Yiddish or a Yiddish accent. It's harder to hear this now, but this is from the ancient radio show The Goldbergs, and it's now talked about more than actually heard. But this is Gertrude Berg, who actually did not have this old Yiddish accent, but did it well, doing a scene where she is shampooing her daughter's hair. They actually used shampoo and water in the studio when they did this in 1941. So here's an example of how a young Jewish woman would have spoken in 1941, and it's the grand old New York accent. It's not meant for comedy. This is somebody who now we would think of as about 90, but this is when she was young. And this is her mother doing her hair, and we hear that the mother is somebody who grew up with Yiddish and speaks English in a way that signals that. So here is Gertrude Berg and Rosalind Sibber, not Silber as it sometimes is in some sources, Rosalind Sibber, and they are doing the shampoo scene from the Gold Bergs in 1941.
Rosalie, so come quickly, darling. The water's standing. Come, baby. And bring the soap in a big towel, please.
I don't know why that couldn't wait, Mom.
Well, why should it wait, darling? Why should it wait? Now I have a minute, so come, let me shampoo you. Come, dear.
I can wash my own hair, Mom.
All right, darling. Don't I know you can wash your own hair? Don't I know that? But come, darling. One, two, three, and I'll be finished. Come.
All right.
So bend down over here, dear.
Can't get any soap in my eyes, Mom.
I wouldn't get any soap. Why should I get soap? Bend a little lower.
All right.
A little lower.
So that is a little scene. I will not share with you how much of that radio show I have listened to because I'm crazy and I've seen all the surviving TV episodes. Very charming show. It's not engaged as much as it should be. Have any of you ever done the Goldbergs, or is it just dead except in my house and one other person's?
I've watched.
I had a great TV trivia book. I was a trivia obsessive, and I remember reading about the Goldbergs.
I did too when I was younger. Right.
So I'm intrigued that the mother from the old country basically is played to sound like Zsa Zsa Gabor. Darling. I mean, that was bizarre.
No, to me, I have, you know, my grandparents on my father's side died when I was very young, but I had an aunt who lived until just last year, and she had, it was not that strong, but that to me, I felt it hearing that.
Sounds
like,
kind of
just
like
sort of this accent that, you know, you live in this country for your adult life and you still sort of retain it in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I highly recommend going online and finding the Goldbergs TV episode where they do the whole Kol Nidre. It could actually be not a comedy. It was actually very touching at times. And I say that given no experience.
That was
with
that
all
Sweeps
that.
Week special, right?
It was their
going to do for big ratings.
Their very special
episode. For your consideration.
Like 15 minutes on it. Let me do a quick little quiz here. Liel, what is Josh Groban?
What is Josh Groban?
Yes.
A mammal, carbon-based life form.
What is his career?
He's a singer in the 1812 and
you
the Comet of Sasha and Pierre.
Was it the aspirated G, the hard G, singer?
Yes.
Singer.
Now, I'm going to make a fool of myself, but singer versus singer, because singer and finger do not rhyme precisely in the English of most Americans. If you say singer, you're in the minority as far as how that word is pronounced. In my experience, the only people I've ever heard who say singer are Northeastern urban Jewish people. Am I wrong?
Is it the same people who say Florida?
There would be an overlap as opposed to
this
Florida.
Is it the population of Florida that calls it Florida?
What's interesting is, you know, so Liel's Israeli and didn't live here till you were, 23?
Israeli.
And some words, and on some words, to me,
he's off.
On some words, he's British.
Just
but
wrong.
Now I don't know what I say. Can you ask me the question?
What?
I love that you went with Josh Groban. Could you?
Right. Of all entertainers, is the one that
I'm trying to think of somebody where you would think of the voice.
Michael Brulé. What's that guy's name?
Bublé.
Adam Levine.
What is Alanis Morissette?
Singer.
You did it. Singer.
He interrupted me, so you couldn't even hear me do it.
Try me.
What was Ethel Merman?
Ethel Merman was a singer.
Singer. Okay. So you just said
was
singer. You didn't say singer.
Because he's from, like, he has this, like,
I grew up in Western Massachusetts.
Plus, look at him.
Okay, so
everything about him is waspy.
So
he just stepped out of an L.L. Bean ad.
Johnny Lacoste shirt, Liel Leibowitz. Can I throw one at you? How do you say the word that in French is parce que? How do you say it in English?
Because.
So my father-in-law, being a Jew from the Lower East Side, born 1930-something, but this is not just Jewish. This is New York. It says because.
Because.
Yeah. Now, because I'm going to take the uptown bus, I'm going to because.
Does that sound familiar to you too?
Yeah.
Because. No.
Uh-huh. A little bit to me.
Okay.
It's a soft S.
Yeah.
But I hear it in my own life from some elderly Jews, but I realized I hear it from older New Yorkers.
It's like for older New Yorkers, A-W is R. Like my mother-in-law who grew up in Long Island would say, I saw.
Yeah.
That's an American thing that overlaps with Jewishness, but it's definitely there.
I had never heard the Florida until we were talking about in the office at Tablet one day, and somebody said Florida.
It's like orange.
Florida. Orange.
Yeah, or horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. I say all those words that way.
I got to college, and all my friends were like, what? You talk so weird. And I was like, is it the Long Island accent? They're like, no, it's these words
it's
that
say
you're
horrible.
Saying.
So they say,
yeah, I say horrible.
Can't hear you. Over your Long Island
Someone
accent.
Did once tell me they couldn't hear me over my Long Island accent.
Person
sucks. But also, she's the one.
That also gets to the fact that a lot of times what people are hearing with certain things they read as Jewish is they're hearing urban.
Or Northeastern vernacular.
And I think that I don't know how that relates to, say, Irish and Italian American New Yorkers. I mean, if you give me a Boston accent, I read Irish because I grew up in Massachusetts.
Right.
So that's
right.
You say, what do Irish Americans sound like? The urban accent I hear is Boston.
That cab
but here,
driver.
But here, Mark, is where we have the words. So in Tablet, we used to have this project of words and expressions that only Jews would use.
Mm-hmm.
The gallivanting
spatula. Two words that only Jews would say.
This was actually before I joined the staff, so
here's
I didn't know
an expression that I'm 100% sure only Jews use. 100%.
100%.
100%.
Give me an example of its usage.
Did you like Wonder Woman, the movie? Oh, 100%.
That's Jewish.
Profoundly.
I've been obsessed with this for a while. I didn't hear it till I, as a journalist, interviewed some Orthodox people. It is ubiquitous in everywhere from modern Orthodoxy all the way to ultra-Orthodox.
Are these the people
Hasidic.
Who click their tongue? Like that thing that I've heard
yeah.
about?
Yeah, but
that?
Even us, I
don't even know about
100%.
That one.
I've heard it at Columbia a little bit with Orthodox Jewish
We have colleagues
Jewish
at
students.
Tablet. Our most Orthodox colleagues will sometimes...
Mark, demonstrate it so I don't get accused of stereotyping.
Ask me a question.
Have you seen the Wonder Woman movie? And what did you think after all of this coverage?
So let me say
okay, I know it.
So because I love 70s hero movies, it's not that I love Wonder Woman, it's that I had to
see a regular Alvy Singer over
this
here.
This is Woody Allen. That's right.
That's the thing. I think we go too far towards like the Woody Allen, the oi,
yeah,
I gotta go,
it.
I'm schlepping to the store. Like, I don't think that's so real anymore. I think it's almost this young Jewish actors and actresses sort of do it. Like, I think there's sort of a very affected thing that's going on where people say schlep.
Can I tell
people
you?
People say shtup. Like,
no.
Oh, shtup is fabulous.
You can't curse on the show, right?
I curse all the time.
No word makes me more furious than when people say, oi. Just like as a sort of affectation, like, oi.
Yeah, I hate
I've
oi.
I've heard many Jewish people say oi affectively, though.
Nope.
You don't like that.
That's Jew face.
Because you think it's Jewish drag.
That's Jew face. That's
why?
Basically
why that one thing?
Because that would be something that someone who has precisely zero Jewish or not, right? That's precisely zero connection to the actual faith, the culture, or anything else, would just say as an easy way to telegraph that, look at me, I'm being authentic.
You know, this is what all the mail about this episode is going
to
be.
Hey, Leo, let me ask you something. Let me ask you something though. So is it just when people perform it, like oi or oi vey, or is it
no?
Because I can
in
see.
Print.
I think I know people.
Anthony
who would
Weiner,
say,
oi vey.
Well, certainly,
yeah, that's like the New York Post front page.
Nope.
As a New York Post,
not happening.
But don't you some? Couldn't you imagine you or people you know in the Jewish community? Sometimes you know you an editor sends back a draft all marked up, and you say, oh, I didn't want to work this weekend. Even just that.
No, it's just like, what is this for Stuckener? You go deeper.
No, I
you
think
go real.
I have to say. I get what you're saying, like the sort of campy oi, like I don't like that. But I do think that there is no replacement for it. You know, if someone sends me a text, you know, like was coming to meet you, but then just like got tied up. It's like you're sort of like oi, or like there's a way in which that telegraphs sympathy and understanding and empathy.
A little warm.
Yes. And as opposed to ugh, like that's the other one I have. Ugh. Like I'm thinking about responses I have to text messages.
Don't we have emojis for that now?
No, I just think oi, like I get it. Oi says I understand exactly what you've just said and I know how annoying it is to you.
You guys, I want to transition to another topic because I want to make sure we get this in. I have a book.
You're about to segue?
Called I Am Segueing right now.
All right.
As I'm doing it.
All right.
Jewish as a Second Language. And there's a wonderful passage. By now, you've had at least 20 odd years in which to finish your sentences. This is somebody who's about to marry into a Jewish family. This is enough for anybody. We hope you enjoyed the luxury while you had it because you will never finish one again. Nor would you want to. The more interruptions, the more enthusiastic the conversation. Three or four people talking at once is ideal. This is your signal of acceptance. If no one jumps in to join the fun, it means that what you're saying is boring. Here is an example of that from none other than Annie Hall. I know that you've all been waiting for us to do a clip from that. And here's a clip of what's been called overlapping conversation among New York Jewish people. In actually academic literature, remember I touched on this in my conversation not long ago with Deborah Tannen. Anyway, here is the clip.
Let him drop dead. Who needs his business?
His wife has diabetes.
Diabetes? Is that an excuse, diabetes?
Let me tell you.
A man is 50 years old and doesn't have a substantial job.
Is that a reason to steal?
Oh, yes, that's right.
What are you talking about? You know what you're talking about?
Sure, defend him.
Oh, you remember her, Annie.
Yeah, I do.
We're in 4-H.
Mo Moscow. He had a coronary.
You don't.
John, we had you on our show in November, December, and I remember we just interrupted you the entire time, and you actually, you know, you knew what was happening, right? Because you have this breadth of understanding. And there's one point, I re-listened to it, both of my co-hosts interrupted me, and I kept going. I persisted.
Good.
Nevertheless,
and good.
You apologized to me because you said, oh, sorry, Stephanie, I interrupted you. And I was so taken aback to hear someone acknowledge that they had interrupted me.
I want you to know that wasn't pretentiously self-conscious. It's because if you happen to be a linguist, you're very aware of the literature about interrupting, which I think is becoming a meme now in general in a way that it was not 5 years ago, but that men constantly interrupt women. So I do think about it. And I'm not accusing you two of not thinking about it, but that's where that.
Yeah, we don't.
That,
you can accuse us of that.
That would come from.
It's our toxic masculinity.
But to be honest, and this is like a personal thing, I'm on a show with two like very assertive assertive. I don't know why I said that like that. Jewish men, right? Men. And it took me a long time to feel like I could hold my own in conversation. I don't know what that was. I don't know what kind of gender dynamics. I don't know what kind of just personal dynamics. But now I interrupt just as much as they do. And it carries over into my regular life. Like, I'm now an interrupter.
I think that's better to a certain degree.
It should be said you're engaged to a fairly quiet gentleman.
He is quiet, but yeah, I guess
Ben is not an interrupter. To his credit, to his great credit.
No.
He's a listener.
But you feel this
is gendered. I think the next therapy session,
right? I think it definitely is gendered. But it's funny that once we have, a non-Jew in that environment, we are basically the same person, right? Like, we are all interrupt. We're like a wall of interruption.
So do all three of you recognize this business of this interruption as part of Jewish culture?
So let me say this. I think genetically as well as culturally an interrupter. I mean, I'm the worst of the worst of the worst, right? My dad's not an interrupter. My siblings are not big interrupters. My mom and I basically did all the talking in our family out of the six of us. And there were four people who were really, really thoughtful about listening and, you know, very much to their credit. So for me, I'm not going to say it's cultural. What I will say is that as someone who is predisposed to talk a lot and interrupt a lot, it is often in Jewish context where that's not read as hostile and aggressive. It might be read as a little much, but there's no kind of moral or ethical valence to it. Whereas I have been in contexts where that is really hostile. And this gets politicized in other ways too. Like, I do interrupt men every bit as much as I interrupt women.
Are you sure?
I really think, I mean, I interrupt everyone maximally.
I agree with that. I think he's not, it's not gendered for him.
No. Okay.
I think women perhaps pick up on being interrupted in a way that it might roll off a man. But yeah, I mean, it's crazy. We interrupt a lot. Our editor has actually like given us notes saying, you guys have to stop interrupting each other so much. It's hard for me to edit because if you land a really good joke and someone interrupts you, I can't get that.
You can't transcribe.
So yeah, it's funny. And the other thing is, so my fiance Ben listens to podcasts on like 1.5 speed. It gives me schvilkes, right? Like, it makes my heart race. But he says, I can't do that with your podcast because you guys talk so fast.
We're already odd three speed.
Quickly in your ovaries.
Yeah.
Oh,
then you compare this to someone like your boss and mine at Panoply, Andy Bowers, who literally won't speak until you're completely done.
Yeah.
And I had lunch with him the other day.
The Goyim are so funny.
And, you know, and he is a WASP from the West Coast where they already are slowed down and, you know, happy to let you
stereotypically,
do your
thing. But yes.
And
exactly.
I mean, Andy, who's such a thoughtful and witty and interesting guy to talk to, but I'm aware of the different, I mean, he is at the opposite tempo.
I've had to learn how to interrupt. I'm not a natural interrupter, and I've noticed that in some conversations, and Mark, I don't mean just with you, that you have to learn to break in because real conversation for many people does not happen the way it's written in scripts for plays. But yeah, it's an acquired skill at times. Now that we're talking about Jewish speech, can you please imitate Gal Gadot, who's in the current Wonder Woman movie, which I intend to see?
I will never make fun of our beloved national heroine, Gal Gadot, but I will say that watching that movie at times was a very funny and somewhat distracting experience because here's Wonder Woman, right? About to go into battle, and she's like, don't worry, I will save you. And I just felt so happy.
You felt like you were finally represented.
Like, here, hold my falafel. I will go into battle now for you.
Like, so you're like, am I watching Don't Mess with the Zohan?
I hear my Uncle David. It's like 87-year-old Uncle David is like, eh.
But listen, there were all these American actresses in the movie playing like her mother and her. It's like Connie Britton and
Robin Wright.
Nielsen,
right?
Connie Britton is in it?
No.
Oh, I've got
Connie Nielsen?
Oh, it's not Connie Britton.
What am I? I only know
she
Robin
would be
Wright.
A little too old.
And right. And Robin Wright is in here. And Robin Wright's like, Diana, you mustn't go into battle with a man. It's so great.
Well, I feel like it's all those movies that take place in a time you don't understand. Like, they all speak with this sort of like British inflection. And
that's
you're right. Like,
that's even somehow the universal
accent.
Yeah,
like it's like a movie about Rome and everyone has a British accent.
We can't go there.
Yeah. Right,
and you know what?
But it's like the Israeli version
new,
of that.
The new accent is the Israeli
It's like the
accent.
Mediterraneanized version.
You'll see. There would be like, you know, Masterpiece Theater be like Downton Abbey's like, where are the servants to bring the tea? Very late now. Be amazing.
With that, I have to bring us to a close. Thank you very much, Mark and Stephanie and Liel, for coming onto my show in my space.
Just interrupted you.
Sorry.
Saying on your show.
On your show.
Hey,
doing
Mark.
Your outro.
I was just going to say, like, if people thought we were a huge asset to your show, where could they hear our show?
They're going to hear Unorthodox.
So
Unorthodox is another podcast, and it's better than this one. It's been running for how long?
Almost 100 episodes. Almost 100 episodes.
That's, boy, I'll never get that far. Almost 100 episodes.
To 120.
And so you can hear that at?
Well, iTunes or Panoply.fm.
For example, yeah, we're both on Panoply.
Yeah.
And so
wherever podcasts
highly
are sold or distributed for free.
I think they're going to do the double Panoply after this.
I highly recommend that. And, you know, folks, many of you have been asking me to do an episode about, well, there are two things that people want. You want one on the verb to be, and you want one on contractions. And I've been thinking about the contractions, and I think what you really want is for me to say that people did used to use them. But beyond that, I'm not sure if I can get a half hour out of that. But on to be, that is almost certainly going to be the next episode, and I'm going to do one of my solos. And then after that, folks, I'm almost sure that I have a very, very special guest. I mean, if you've enjoyed any of the previous episodes, this one is going to be the biggest episode of all, because I'm going to have a big, big guest. But more about that in the future. You can reach us at lexiconvalley@slate.com. And to listen to past shows and subscribe, or just to reach out, go to slate.com/lexiconvalley. This show is produced by Mike Volo, as always, and the host is me, John Porter.
I love you, a knadle and a knish, a knadle and a knish, and a knipple and a kish.
A knipple and a kish, and fa nickel haliva, fa nickel haliva, and a lovely matzah bra.
How about you?
I'll
cook your fancy dishes, so please don't be facetious. I love you, a hummin' tash vid moon.
You bet your pretty poonam I do.
Oh, darling, you know, after all this singing, I'm so tired and feisty.
You want to go have this on a malted?
Ooh, ah!